The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
President Trump's peace plan for Gaza hitting a snag, Israel.
Israel rejects the 15-point plan. I heard that there were those who said, you didn't say it, but we did say it, and here I am saying it again.
Less than a fortnight ago, the US president was heralding a breakthrough, saying his Board of Peace had reached agreement for the complete disarmament of Hamas and the gradual withdrawal of Israeli forces from the Strip.
I have an understanding with Israel. Israel's very happy about it.
But there's renewed disagreement over the timings of that roadmap.
Israel rejects the 15-point plan. The IDF will not carry out any withdrawal until Hamas is disarmed.
It's a risky move in an already fractured relationship, breaking with Trump in a time where support for Israel is already dwindling in the U.S.
You know, this is a pretty remarkable rift because they go out of their way to make the case that they are fully in sync. And yet on Gaza, they really have not been.
Israel rejects the 15-point document. The IDF will not execute any withdrawal until Hamas is disarmed. And when I say disarming Hamas, it means heavy weapons, less heavy weapons, all weapons. And we are talking about real disarmament, not fictitious disarmament.
So for now, Israel's forces, which fully occupy 70% of the Strip, are going nowhere.
Well, there are a number of things in this 14-point plan that are politically problematic for Benjamin Netanyahu. The plan makes clear that Israeli forces will be expected to withdraw in stages in parallel with Hamas disarmament. Now, that is a very different proposition from the total victory over Hamas that Mr. Netanyahu had promised his voters. If it's implemented, it will create the conditions for what it calls a credible pathway to a Palestinian state. That's something Mr. Netanyahu has said he would never agree to, and he repeated that again tonight.
Well, President Trump has in the past expressed frustration with Prime Minister Netanyahu and Israeli military operations in Lebanon and Gaza and in Iran, but certainly nothing of this scale. And it was just 9 days ago that President Trump said that Israel was very, very happy with the deal and had been consulted. Now he's in the kind of awkward position of having to explain why that doesn't appear to be the case.
We don't know yet what President Trump will say now, how he will react.
I think this is going to be a real difficult situation. I think the 15-point plan President offered was really dead on arrival from the start. There wasn't buy-in from Israel. There wasn't buy-in from Hamas. And ultimately, what these things have to do to be resolved is what he didn't do in the beginning. We've got to bring in partners in the region. We've got to bring in people internationally to come and enforce anything that's going to be, agreed upon. But right now, there's no expectation that Hamas will really give up all their weapons. There's no expectation that Israel will unilaterally cede that territory they've had, particularly with the elections coming.
Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has stood up to a lot of people, to Hamas, to Hezbollah, to Hassan Nasrallah, to Iran. Now he's forced to stand up to Donald Trump. Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. There's lots of busy events going on at our headquarters campus right now. The orientation, the start of a new college year already. So I'm happy to be able to sub in and join all of you today, going out from our offices here in the UK, looking at the most important news of the day, of the weekend. And one of these biggest stories is what could be a dramatic moment for US-Israel relations. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu having to stand up and say, no, we are not going to go along with this peace deal from President Trump. President Trump wants Israel to pull out of Gaza and basically, as you heard a bit about in the cold open there, put in place this kind of fake disarmament. And a lot of the details that we've had about the 15-point deal that supposedly Hamas have agreed to, it's been pretty vague. I don't know how good of a picture we have at that. Some of the details from one source will contradict some from another. Presumably Benjamin Netanyahu was much, much better informed. But the general gist of the deal seems like Hamas would take their weapons and hand them over to some other Palestinian Gaza authority. And I don't know if there has ever been a Palestinian Gaza authority that Hamas have not basically controlled. So you would have Hamas taking the weapons, giving them to a different set of Hamas terrorists, saying, we've disarmed Israel, you've got to get out of here. Israel getting out of there and Hamas back in control of Gaza with all of their weapons, ready to go on the rampage again. And Benjamin Netanyahu, to his credit, has said, no, we're not going to be a part of this. I think it's interesting, in the past, he's let some of these pretty negative looking deals go ahead. And I think there's been a bit of a strategic calculation there. He's in a very tough position where it's like, well, we could say no to this and throw all our toys out the pram and stand up to this, but that might hurt our relationship with President Trump. So instead, we know Hamas, you know, Hamas never stick to their agreements. They never follow through. So we can let this play out. We know that eventually we'll go along with it for now, and we'll be confident that Hamas are going to blow this up. And I think that's kind of the approach they've taken in the past. But it seems like for whatever reason, he can't do that this time. I mean, maybe he's looking at this and saying, well, Hamas doesn't have any reason to blow this up. They can just move their weapons to some other terrorists. If they're patient, they'd get everything that they would want from this peace deal. So this time we have to be the ones that say, no, we can't go forward with this. I mean, we've seen President Trump right from the start of his presidency push Israel to adopt these terrible deals. I mean, remember, right around his inauguration in January 2025, there was so much that was fantastic then. He was moving quickly to take care of a lot of these attacks from within the United States. A lot of these things that Barack Obama, he's really using Joe Biden as a puppet, to put in place. And President Trump was dealing with that. I mean, he moved incredibly quickly. It took just moments almost after he took over for the mass migration, all of these millions of people crossing the border every year, to be dramatically reduced. He did a lot very fast, but also very quickly, right from the start, he pushed this peace deal with Hamas. And we saw that kind of desperation to be thought of as a peacemaker. And maybe it was Barack Obama had his Nobel Peace Prize, so he wanted a Nobel Peace Prize, whatever it is or was. You know, he wanted to compromise with Hamas and was pursuing peace that way. And so in the midst of all of these announcements and things that he was doing to deal with real problems, Mr. Gerald Flurry really drew a lot of attention to this peace deal that he pushed with Hamas. This is what he said about this on the Key of David program all the way back in January, the same month, you know, just weeks after Donald Trump took office.
So I'll tell you, this has exposed Mr. Trump in a way that none of us want to see, but it is the truth. Something is dreadfully wrong here. What is it? There is this victory, almost victory, that suddenly now they have lost the war with the Gaza terrorists, and they're going to have to be living beside them forever, it looks like. They were there to destroy the Hamas terrorists, and now the opposite happened. What are we to do with that? But I'll tell you this, what Mr. Trump has done here is going to plague him from the very beginning to the end of his tenure in office. That is a fact, that, and you wait and see if it doesn't happen that way, unless there's a big change in what he's doing. He has disgraced Netanyahu, and it's just a catastrophe that it's hard to even describe.
I think this is just kind of an amazing clip. It is one worth playing regularly, Because what have we seen happen since? That statement, this is going to plague him from the very beginning to the end of his tenure. I remember hearing that and wondering, you know, how are we going to see this play out? How are we going to see this be a plague? I didn't doubt that it would be, but I didn't necessarily see, well, how is this going to happen? How are we going to see this, you know, trying to do a deal with Hamas plague Donald Trump? In what form is that going to take? And I think we've seen one of the biggest plague probably on Donald Trump's presidency is this completely failed approach to peace. And it has really hurt him, and it's really hurt America. We've had several attempts at peace deals with Hamas. In this particular deal, back from that January peace deal, we had a whole load of Hamas terrorists released from prison. They're now, a lot of them, in Gaza, fighting the Jews, fighting the Israelis. We saw subsequent attempts to bring about peace. We've seen Hezbollah not wiped out, still being able to keep going, being severely diminished. But Donald Trump has often been there to hold back Israel and to try and stop Israel from being able to end the fighting, just deal with the problem, defeat them totally, and then move on. But they've been restrained from doing that. And then Iran, the big one. I mean, kind of just like Hamas after October 7th, there was some right instincts. Donald Trump initially supported Israel. We'll support you. We'll help you do what it takes to deal with the terrorists. And so he goes in and does start dealing with Iran in a way that presidents had refused to deal with the problem going back decades. And what plagues him? Well, it's the same approach that he brought to Hamas. Okay, we'll fight the terrorists for a bit, and then we'll sit down and do a deal with them. And it's a case of, well, you know, they're terrorists, okay, but they've got grievances. And it's a view that kind of says, well, they're fundamentally good people and they're rational people, and we can do a deal. So we can show them, we can beat them down, we can defeat them. Show them, hey, you know, we've got a lot more power we could bring to bear. You could be wiped out, or you can deal a deal. And surely the rational, logical thing will be for them to say, okay, well, we'll set aside some of our hatred and we'll set aside our nuclear program or our weapons, and we'll do a deal with you. And maybe that works when you're kind of working with American businessmen in the art of the deal, and both sides are just trying to make a profit. And that's what's on the table there. But this is not about trying to make a profit. It's not even about trying to have a nice life. It's not about rational goals here. Hamas wants to wipe out the Jews. Iran wants to wipe out the Jews. It wants to bring down the little Satan and the big Satan, Israel and the United States. And it wants to start a chain of events that leads to the return of their Mahdi, their kind of Messiah figure, and the global victory of Islam. These are not rational goals where we can say, okay, well, if you give a little bit here and I give a little bit there, then we can both make progress towards what we want. And Donald Trump doesn't see that, and it has plagued him again and again and again. And now we see this kind of limbo with Iran. Instead of going in hard, and it would have been tough, but having dealt with the problem, and now things could be open and rebuilt and oil maybe getting back to normal, we're just still in this limbo. We're still in these high gas prices, and you've got Iran and a lot of the world just mocking Donald Trump. The latest on that is Iran is saying, okay, yeah, we've done a deal with Oman. We're nearly ready to open the Strait of Hormuz. And we don't know the details of that, but that's what they're saying. And they're saying, well, before we do, we want one more thing. We want reparations from America. Or there's a short list of things that they want. So there's a few things, but they're saying, what we want reparations. We want America to pay us back for the damage that they've done. Do that, and then we'll open the Strait of Hormuz. You know, they're just getting more and more bold. You give them one set of conditions, and they'll bring in others. Reparations. This is what defeated countries pay. Reparations. I mean, it's basically tribute, but an excuse, a way to put it in modern language. You know, we're not just demanding tribute because we won the war. We're saying you started it and you must repair the damage you've done. But still, it's what victorious powers demand of defeated powers. That is how Iran is trying to treat the United States. They sometimes get away with treating them that way. This has been a curse. This is plaguing Donald Trump. What, we're nearly 2 years into his presidency, or a year and a half, coming up to the midterms, and it's continuing to plague him. And I think you contrast that with Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, Mr. Flurry, we put him on, we had Mr. Flurry's cover article on the cover of our Trumpet print article, Israel's Rising Lion. And Mr. Flurry said, you know, there's some important lessons we can all learn from Benjamin Netanyahu, from this lion-like determination, that he will keep fighting evil, that he won't compromise with evil. That was just a year ago, the August Trumpet print. And you know, that's, I think, what we see over the weekend. He'll stand up, if necessary, to Donald Trump, his only friend, his staunchest supporter. I mean, Israel, they're working to try and make it as much as possible that they're not relying on other countries, but they're a small country. They're going to have, they don't have a huge amount of resources. They don't just have, they don't have the huge geography that America has and the space to build these massive mines and to find things like rare earth minerals that America's got out in Arizona and things like this. They're always going to be needing other people. And so they need America. But, I mean, Netanyahu's right. They're being pushed to compromise with evil. They're being pushed into a position that they really cannot stomach. I mean, they learned on October 7th what happens when you compromise with evil. What happens when you compromise with a group like Hamas? You know, that's what they did before. They pulled out of Gaza. The Israeli soldiers went into Gaza and grabbed Israeli settlers and dragged them out of Gaza so that they could hand their homes and their farms over to Palestinian terrorists, basically. And they pulled out. And then they said, well, to help you not be terrorists, and we'll help you. We'll try and help you be economically successful, and we'll make it easier for you to cross the border, and we'll even put ourselves at risk to a certain extent by making it easier for you to cross the border so that you can come and get jobs in Israel, so we can have more trade, so there'll be more prosperity, and you know, you benefit and we benefit, and we can learn to live together side by side. They tried that approach, and it led to October 7th. Hamas in Gaza just used everything Israel gave them to try and kill more Jews. And they said, well, what else can we do? And they're starting to see what a wound it is to compromise with terror that way. And so they say, well, we can't do this again. And Israel, or Netanyahu, he pretty much has no choice but to stand up like this. I mean, Mr. Flurry drew lessons for all of us in that article from Benjamin Netanyahu. He said Operation Rising Lion, you know, that was the attack on Iran that came last summer. He said it's just a taste of the lion-like aggression we need. God clearly says we must have the character, the strength, and the boldness of the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. I mean, the Lion of the Tribe of Judah is how he describes Jesus Christ. I mean, that's some of the characteristics that we see in the Jews. There were some lion-like characteristics in the Jews that God loved, that he said, well, I'm going to have my son be born into that tribe. I mean, what a tremendous honor. And what does that show us about that lion-like spirit? You know, Mr. Flurry wrote that in this article. There is something in Judah's lion-like qualities that God loves. Studying the Jews' lion-like qualities also helps us to better see the qualities of the real Lion of Judah, Jesus Christ. And he went on to talk about what we need to be empowered by. We need to be led by the Lion of the Tribe of Judah. That's where we get a lion-like approach in our lives, a refusal to compromise with sin, a refusal to give a little. You know, I like doing this thing and it's wrong, but I'll do it just a little bit and I'll set limits on it. And we can negotiate and maybe I can get some of the benefits there and we can have a win-win deal. No, we can learn about the real lion-like qualities that attacks our sins and our weaknesses and doesn't try to meet them halfway. And that's what you see in Benjamin Netanyahu standing up and saying, no, you know, we're not going to, we cannot go along with President Trump's latest deal. He made clear that Israel, they're not going to be withdrawing from Gaza until they're certain Hamas is disarmed. And he's saying, well, Donald Trump's deal doesn't give us that. Now, he did try to minimize the damage of with his relationship with President Trump. He called him, well, he referred to Mr. Trump as the greatest of our friends in the White House. And Barak Ravid, who works for Axios, he also has a lot. He often has a lot of leaks on Israel from inside the Trump administration. He said, well, generally the view among Donald Trump staff is, well, this is for domestic consideration. Israel's got an election, and we'll talk about that in a moment. We're not really taking his statements too seriously. But if Netanyahu keeps following through on that, keeps insisting we're not going to implement this peace deal, how is Donald Trump going to react? I mean, don't know. Sometimes it's just talk, though he does often seem to have a bigger willingness sometimes to attack his allies than he does his enemies. And you look at the trends here. Netanyahu visited the White House on July 28th, and you know, if you weren't paying really close to attention to the news, you wouldn't have noticed, because there was no joint press conference, there was no photo op. I mean, this is kind of what happens when you're not trying to make a big statement of support for someone, and potentially where you can't agree. So we're not going to hold a joint press conference because we still don't see eye to eye. We don't want to necessarily proclaim and broadcast the fact that we disagree, but we can't really have a united joint press conference. We don't know for sure that's what came out of this. And of course, there have been times as well where Israel and America have maybe played up the differences to try and catch an enemy napping. There could be some of that 4D chess going on here. But you look at some of the background when you've had Donald Trump ignoring Israel's requests over the memorandum of understanding with Iran. Israel has lobbied hard against that, and America has generally ignored it. And well, we've seen Benjamin Netanyahu was right there. It didn't work. It all fell apart. We've seen Israel try and put pressure on America over the F-35 deal with Turkey and really lobby against, we can't trust these guys. Erdogan he's a bit of an Islamist. He has some radical views, and they're hosting Hamas, and they really don't like the Jews. And okay, they're in NATO right now. They're an American ally on paper, but we need to be careful about trusting these guys. Please don't give them the F-35, this stealth fighter jet. And remember, Turkey has American nuclear bombs, and those nuclear bombs can fit on an F-35. So Israel's saying, please don't give Turkey the ability to drop stealth nuclear bombs. But it looks like America's, I don't think it's fully decided, but they're moving forward with that. Then there's Saudi Arabia's nuclear program. And again, Netanyahu and Israel has been pushing against that. Please don't help the Saudis get a bomb. Okay, again, on the balance of power, they oppose Iran and we oppose Iran. So we're kind of on the same side. But if you look at what these guys believe, and you just look at what the population believes about Israel, about America, or about their duty as Muslims, okay, maybe they're less radical than Iran, but they're pretty radical people. We probably shouldn't be trusting them with nuclear weapons, or I guess it's civilian nuclear power infrastructure at the moment, but that's what it's really all about. I mean, yeah, this is Saudi Arabia, second largest reserves of oil, country's a massive desert. If they're like, oh, we really need electricity, they have a lot of cheaper options. They've got oil. You just cover the desert with solar panels if you're really desperate for any. Like, they don't need. They're of all the countries that might want civilian nuclear power, they're probably the bottom of the list of who needs it the most. It's about moving towards nuclear weapons. And Israel is saying, well, please don't move forward with this. And America seems to be moving forward with this. There's some breaks there with America. When Netanyahu was heading out to visit Donald Trump last week, Axios had this article, a diminished Bibi arrives for his moment with Trump. They had a section in there between the lines. Netanyahu is deeply unpopular in Washington these days among Democrats, Trump's close circle, and the MAGA base. I mean, just listen to some of the ways Donald Trump has talked about Netanyahu. Here's clip two on that.
Iranian state media signaling that talks to end the war are now back on track. That's just after reports that Iran had suspended talks with the United States over Israel's offensive in southern Lebanon. And according to Axios, President Trump just yesterday unloaded on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over this, with expletives flying over the phone. Axios reports that Trump demanded that Netanyahu back off his plans to take his attacks and offensive against Hezbollah straight to the center of Beirut. Trump told Netanyahu, quote, "You're effing crazy. You'd be in prison if it weren't for me. I'm saving your ass. Everybody hates you now. Everybody hates Israel because of this."
It's not the first difficult and tough call they had, although senior U.S. official told me yesterday that it was definitely one of the worst calls they had.
Every now and again, he has to say something nasty about his friend Benjamin Netanyahu, who he admires as a wartime leader. Remember back in June last year, he said that the Israelis didn't know what they were doing.
They don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
After they attacked with missiles a Hamas offices, the headquarters of Hamas, in the Gulf state of Qatar.
A relationship between the US president and Israel's prime minister has soured in recent weeks over the terms of that peace deal with Tehran. In a phone interview with Axios, the US president said while they get along, Mr. Netanyahu knows who the boss is. Speaking to Fox News, Israel's prime minister downplayed reports their relationship is strained.
And he's had put downs. Now, again, he'll put people down and then do business with them and have a kind of, they'll both put that behind them. But what does this say about the Israel-America relationship? We're quite a long way from where we were in the first term, where Israel was naming towns in the Golan Heights after Donald Trump. And they were so close. And these two have been working closely together. And now, now you've got President Trump calling Netanyahu names and Netanyahu saying, well, I can't go along with this peace plan. This Axios piece, it says in public, Trump says his relationship with Netanyahu is still very good. In private, though, Trump has expressed frustration with the Israeli leader. Many senior officials in Trump's inner circle have come to view Netanyahu with disdain, arguing he was consistently wrong about the war. Numerous U.S. officials, including Vance, the vice president, have accused Netanyahu of making rosy predictions that didn't pan out. And maybe that's just an element of blaming Israel for things not working out. You know, I've also seen things, I think, from Barak Ravid and some of the same people publishing leaks from insiders that Israel pushed for a bit of a different picture of the Iran war, and that they weren't necessarily saying, hey, just bomb them and the administration, the regime will be gone in a week. They wanted Kurdish ground forces going in, and they did have a picture of a tougher and harder war, but who knows? Goes on to say that one senior official says he'll come, he'll make his promises, and then we have to check everything out. So apparently people within Mr. Trump's inner circle are getting fed up with him. Then you've got the whole kind of Tucker Carlson wing of the Republican Party, and I think Thomas Massey and some others that make good points on some areas, and yet have... there's some antipathy towards Israel. They don't like Israel, and there's different degrees for different people. Some of it's a dislike of Israel that doesn't just quite seem rational, and they're not necessarily out there spewing hate against the Jews, but why not work with this ally in the Middle East and this democracy and this bulwark against terror? What you're promoting doesn't seem quite radical. And then you have some like Tucker Carlson that's just kind of gotten to more and more unhinged theories. And I think Patrick Buchanan really started a lot of that. Again, fantastic on some things. And then he had just this strange view. You look into how he viewed World War II, and it was basically like that nice Mr. Hitler just wanted to send the Jews on a free holiday to Madagascar. And, well, Winston Churchill, the warmonger, declared war on him. So he couldn't do that, and so he had to kill them all, and so the Holocaust is all Churchill's fault. I mean, it was just really bizarre, Patrick Buchanan's views on World War II. And now you see more of that coming across through part of the Republican Party. And then you're starting to see some of the same things in the UK. This has been a lot in the news over the last weekend, where over here you have a split on the right, not just between the Conservative Party in Britain, the kind of the mainstream right, the equivalent of the Republicans, and then Nigel Farage's Reform Party. You have a split as well between Reform and Restore, two kind of upstart parties on the right. And Restore is relatively small, but it seems like it's taking enough, siphoning enough support away from Nigel Farage that it would keep Nigel Farage from coming into power. And it's very hard for Nigel Farage to deal with this, because he had did the same thing for years for the Conservative Party, kind of running to the right and siphoning off enough votes that the Conservatives couldn't come to power. And he argued, I think with a lot of truth to it, that the Conservative Party was so compromised, so far to the left, that you know they needed a new party and it was worth persevering with this. But now you've got Restore trying to do the same thing. But anyway, I think this Restore Party, this offshoot, they say, well, Nigel Farage's reform doesn't go far enough on immigration. And on immigration, I think they make a lot of good points. If you want to solve a lot of the problems in Britain, stopping immigration or slowing immigration isn't enough, because there's a lot of people that hate Britain that are already here. And so Restore say, well, we need to get rid of them as well. That's a good point. When you've let in millions upon millions, when a substantial percentage of your population has values that are completely different from your country, hates a lot of the values your country was built on, yeah, you do need to get them out. Now, part of it, I think, is, or one thing that's important to note is immigration is not Britain's only problem. You deal with immigration, you're not going to solve the problem with things like family breakdown. And that's even a fundamental cause for a lot of these other problems, including why we allowed mass migration in the first place. Just a fundamental family breakdown or breakdown in education as well, and training of our leaders and character, and people going for easy solutions instead of trying to fix some of these bigger problems. So I think that's important to note, that mass migration, you know, all of these Muslims, all of these people from other cultures in Britain, it is a very big problem. It is not the only problem. And some can think, well, we fix this and we fix everything, and that's not true. But you know, with that disclaimer, I think Restore do make a lot of good points on migration. But then they have this really strong, or fairly strong, anti-Semitic strain, where they've even started sounding like radical Muslims themselves, making these nonsense accusations about Israel committing genocide. And in British politics now, you've got the extreme left that are gaining more and more support. First, it was just the Green Party and some kind of Muslim independence candidates. And now it's within the Labour Party itself, making these unhinged accusations against Israel of committing genocide. And it's just inspired really by anti-Semitism, or at least a lot of deceit inspired by that. There is a lot of misinformation, a lot of lies. So, yeah, some of those saying, well, yeah, there's a genocide in Gaza. They may be genuine people, not anti-Semitic people, but just massively misled. There's a lot of bias in the BBC. The true facts that the Israeli Defense Force, the IDF, has been more successful than any army in modern history at avoiding casualties in a high-intensity conflict, in an urban high-intensity conflict, that they've just done an incredible job of avoiding civilian casualties when their enemy is deliberately trying to create civilian casualties because of the news that it makes, the sympathy that it gains them. Yeah, it's an incredible success that the IDF have done. They have worked very hard to avoid genocide in Gaza, but that's not what's put out on the news. That's not a lot of people's perception. So the far left have been talking about that, and now these people on the right are sounding the same way. They're sounding, just like the radical Muslims. They want to get out of the country. They're giving the same propaganda. There's genocide going on in Gaza, and it's just not true. And so the Reform Party, they've said, well, we are open to a deal with Restore, but I think Nigel Farage, or at least a party spokesman, he said there are anti-Semitic and extreme racists at or near the top of the party, and they would have to go first. And I think they're right. And then there's other things that Restore want to do, like they want to ban kosher slaughter. And that's basically an excuse just to attack Jews. We've seen that in European countries as well. The Restore Party, they've used anti-Semitic language, like saying Nigel Farage has been bought off by the Jews. So it's becoming normalized in the right in Britain, in the right in America, on the left in Britain and America. There's more and more pressure within Donald Trump saying just cut ties with Israel. Stop supporting Israel. We don't like Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's work with Hamas. They'll at least say yes to a deal with us. Well, yeah, if you give them a lot of what they want. This was another story from Axios that I saw over the weekend. U.S. synagogues turn members into security teams. Synagogues across the U.S. are having congregants trained to be volunteer security teams as anti-Semitic assaults hit record levels and Jewish gathering places face increasing threats. They're under attack. And that's been the case in Europe. That's been the case in England for a long, long time. I remember visiting a synagogue 10, 15 years ago. And there was another time more recently we went to see a Melanie Phillips talk, I think it was, that was being organized at a synagogue. And they're fortresses. And they have to be, because if they don't have bars over every window, someone is going to smash that window and try and break in and put people's lives at risk. And they are forced to be surrounded by bars and have only one or like, you know, a fixed small number of entrance and exit points that they can secure and search and verify who's coming in, because they're under attack. And you're seeing that more and more in America now as well. Axios wrote, the front doorway of many synagogues are becoming both a place of welcome and a security checkpoint, a sign of how anti-Semitism is reshaping Jewish life in America. Like I said, I think that's been normal for years in Europe and in the UK. And I guess Jews in America, maybe they've been safer for a while, but it seems like that time is over. The traditional practice of hiring a security guard for high holy day services, installing cameras and calling police if something happens, is giving way to more complex layered security systems. It's not enough just to hire a security guard on the holy days and have security cameras. They've got to do more. This push for hypervigilance comes as physical assaults against Jews in the U.S. hits a 46-year high in 2025. Recent high-profile anti-Semitic episodes include a double stabbing on New York City's Upper West Side and swastikas painted at a fire-damaged temple and Jewish center in California. They say that more than 7,100 active volunteers have been trained by the Community Security Service, which now protects more than 500 synagogues and events across the U.S. each week. They quote this nonprofit from the Community Security Service, Richard Priam. He's a former Israeli paratrooper. He said more than 20,000 community members completed training last week with the help of former FBI agents and retired law enforcement officers. And then they also talk about the Secure Community Network, the official safety and security organization for North American Jewish communities. It says its duty desk logged a record 5,409 threat incidents and suspicious activity reports in 2024, 112% more than 2 years earlier. And having to defend themselves in America. I was talking on Trumpet World, another kind of sister program, you could say, I guess, to the Trumpet Daily, where we focus on some of the non-American news stories a bit more, where I was talking to Ilan Levy, this former Israeli government spokesman, and kind of talked about some of this signs of America more generally turning against Israel. And, okay, you know, you can talk about Donald Trump, will this one guy do this or that, but there is a society-wide shift that obviously has long-term implications beyond just, well, what is one man going to do? That's going to affect the policies of these different parties at election time and who is elected later. And anyway, I asked him about this and said, well, is it bad for Israel to see this? And he, I think he made a really good point. He was like, well, really, it's bad for the United States. It's that's where the biggest warning is, when you see this widespread irrationality and turning against one of their best allies in the war against terror. It makes America less safe. And it's a symptom of major problems and sicknesses in American society, just like this rise in Europe and in Britain is for major problems in British and European society. And I thought that was a good point. He's right about that. But it is bad for Israel, too. Again, they need an outside power. They always have. If they're going up against bigger rivals, you know, maybe they could take care of a Hamas or a Hezbollah-sized group by themselves. But Iran or Turkey, some of these powers that could turn against them, that maybe they're not at war with them right now. They're not even particularly hostile right now. You know, Egypt, you look at opinion polls in Egypt, they have a peace deal with Israel. Vast majority of Egyptians don't like it. If their dictatorial regime falls and you get a democracy, they're going, a true democracy in Egypt would go to war with Israel the next day. And they don't have the domestic defense industry. As impressive and as incredible of things that they've done with lasers intercepting missiles, they need an outside power to resupply them. You know, they needed that in the Yom Kippur War in the 1970s. They needed that in the Six-Day War in the 1960s. When they have these major wars, they need that resupply. They need those arms. And they're losing America. And meanwhile, Germany is looking like a better and better friend. And this was on our website last week. Israel receives largest German submarine since World War II. Germany's ThyssenKrupp Marine Systems delivered the INS Draken, the largest submarine built in Germany since World War II, to Israel's Navy. So the largest submarine they have built since World War II, and they sell it to Israel. They support Israel with it. A great friend. It was $635 million that it cost. It's Israel's most expensive submarine. Sixth submarine received from Germany. Three additional submarines of the more advanced Decker class are expected to arrive beginning in 2031 as part of a separate $3.4 billion deal. And you know what Israel relies on these submarines for? For a lot of them, it's their nuclear deterrent. You know, they have Operation Samson, where if Israel is ever destroyed, if Iran ever overruns Israel, well, you have submarines, diesel submarines, but armed with nuclear weapons that are very hard to track in the ocean. They're rumored to have always one in the Persian Gulf. So if you wipe out Israel, well, Israel's going to bring you down as well, just like Samson brought down the temple around his enemies. And this is the ultimate in Israel's security. Their most essential security, their nuclear security. This is about the survival of the nation and deterring people from completely destroying the nation. And they're trusting that to Germany. They're saying, well, we'll buy our nuclear bombs from Germany. And I think on a relatively surface level, yeah, you can understand why Israel in this world is turning more and more to Germany. America's looking unreliable. Okay, who knows how this is going to play out with Donald Trump, and maybe Donald Trump and Netanyahu make up, maybe they don't. But you have this up and down, you have this increasing attacks, you go back to the 1990s, and in general, you know, there were differences, but the Democrats and the Republicans were both pro-Israel to a degree, and then Barack Obama kind of completely broke that, and you've got the Democrats hating Israel, and then half the Republicans hating it. You know, you don't want to bet your future there. Maybe Israel doesn't make a permanent and total repudiation of America right now, but they'd have to be looking around. Who else is there? If America lets us down, where can we go? What's our backup? And here's Germany, helping them out with their largest ever submarine. And not only that, but you look at all of these attempts where Europe is again and again trying to put sanctions on Israel, and they're using the excuse of settlers and settlements and saying, well, we want to sanction just products made in parts of Israel, you know, in Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, as it's often called. And they say, well, but it's an excuse. It means putting sanctions on everything from Israel in a lot of ways, and then punishing Israel and kicking them out of various different bodies. And Germany is the one that stands up and says no. And we've made the point, Germany leads and dominates the European Union. They're the most populous nation. They have the largest economy. They have a lot of power there. And they're using a lot of that power to make sure the EU doesn't punish Israel. They are looking like a pretty good ally for Israel. And that's exactly what the Bible says would happen. That you would have Israel turn to Assyria, modern-day Germany. They would turn to Jareb, this warlike monarch, as it talks about in Hosea 5. This King Jareb of Assyria for help. You know, that is what is building. So you can see this divide turning Israel more and more towards Germany for help, just as prophesied. And I think you see this prophesied division between America and Britain, between America and Israel, and that's part of what turns, you know, there's two dimensions to this. Bible prophecy says Israel in the Middle East, the Jews, they're going to depend on Germany. Britain is going to turn to Germany. But also this relationship, this special relationship that Britain and America and Israel have had, that's going to be broken. And that's part of the curses on these nations. Mr. Gerald Flurry wrote this in July 2021. In a world this hostile, Britain, America, and the Jewish nation of Israel need to stick together and turn toward God. But they're splitting from God and from each other. There will be no helper for Israel, not even from other modern Israelite nations. You know, they're not going to help each other. It is shameful we're causing so much of the division and bringing it on them, on ourselves. You know, it's shameful we're bringing a lot of this division. And this division is a curse. And in that article, he points to the spiritual dimension behind all of this division, division within nations, division between nations. I mean, anytime we're talking about anti-Semitism, we have to see the spiritual dimension there. That there is a real spirit world. And, you know, Jesus Christ confirmed that again and again and again. And Satan and the demons influence world events in all kinds of irrational ways. They stir up emotion in all kinds of different ways. And one way that they do that is hatred against the Jews, because they hate the vision that is there behind the Jews. There's a vision there. You know, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, Jesus Christ, that God selected that race to have his son be born of a Jewish woman. Incredible honor. Satan hates that. The Jews have preserved so much of God's truth. You know, we have the Old Testament and we have things like the Sabbath and the holy days. They've preserved those oracles, as it talks about in the book of Romans. Satan hates that and God's law. And God promised, well, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. That there would be a throne, that his son, Jesus Christ, would sit on a throne, a human throne that human beings had. And then Jesus Christ would return and sit on that throne, a throne that was given to Judah. And that throne would then go out and rule over the whole universe. I mean, that's a vision ultimately of Satan being defeated, destroyed, cast out, and being replaced by a scepter, by a throne that is in Judah. And that ignites all kinds of passions and hatred in him. So we need to see that dimension. But we see that in all of this different division. And Mr. Flurry, the article was The Real Rift Caused by the Royal Couple, a relatively short article, but he pointed to other bits and pieces, other articles, other important books like America Under Attack that he'd written that explained other parts of this in more detail. But it basically gets into, you have an Antiochus, a man that Satan was using within the United States to stir up all kinds of division and to use that to bring down America from the inside. And it was sin, lawlessness, law breaking of God's law that gave this man an opportunity, an opening. And again, America Under Attack, it shows, well, that man was Barack Obama. And we still see the consequences of a lot of division that he was able to stir up within the United States. I mean, we see that daily in the news, the division that is still there in America that he exploited. And the same man, as Mr. Flurry points out in this article, he worked hard to divide Britain from America. You know, you have Winston Churchill. Netanyahu compared a lot to Winston Churchill. Mr. Flurry made that comparison in his Israel's Rising Lion article. Winston Churchill was a watchman warning about real dangers, and Netanyahu fills a similar role, warning about the danger of a nuclear Iran. Winston Churchill was also in many ways a symbol of British and American unity, the special relationship. He had an American mother, an English father, and I think more clearly than anyone else, he saw the need for these two powers to stand together in World War II. What these two could do together for the world. I mean, back then, the British Empire and the United States of America. And really imagine if those two had stayed united after the war, the way that Winston Churchill wanted, and if there wasn't the kind of the collapse of morale and exhaustion that you saw in Britain and the British Empire. He saw so much potential for good for those two nations working together. And he was a supporter of the Jews in the Middle East as well. I mean, just think what a unification between those three after 1948, really backing and supporting each other. What that could have done for the world. I'm not talking about being one nation or kind of globalism, but you know, these nations that have some values that come from the Bible, ultimately, that value things like the rule of law, a biblical principle. You know, this is the oldest book that articulates the rule of law. And you go all the way back to Moses coming out of Egypt, and Moses can't do anything that he wants. He can't just look around and say, oh, well, that you own, no, that's mine now because I'm the leader and I'm in charge. When other leaders, you know, Pharaoh, he could do anything what he wanted. Hey, I like your house. It's my house now. Rule of law comes from the Bible. You know, these nations with some of these biblical values, what they could have done for the world. And then the division between them, well, that's a big curse. And of course, Barack Obama, he gets rid of the Churchill bust. That's gone. Donald Trump comes in, he brings it back. Joe Biden comes in, it's gone again. Can't stand him because of what he represents. And he worked, Barack Obama, to divide America from Israel. And I think he really succeeded in dividing the Democratic Party from Israel. One of his first big trips, first big speeches, to go over to Cairo and to really back Israel's enemies across the Middle East. And I think in this context, it's worth considering the election that Israel's going into, because they've got an election scheduled for October 27th. And I think this is what Donald Trump is doing, could lose Netanyahu the election. I mean, I don't know how close it's going to be or exactly what's going to happen here. It looks very close, though. I think the latest polls I saw today basically shows neither faction winning outright. But you could see this being what pushes Benjamin Netanyahu out of office. Not just this one peace deal, but Donald Trump's whole position since he came into office. The last 18 months or so. And then if that happens, if Benjamin Netanyahu is gone in October, you don't have this kind of watchman-like figure in charge of Israel anymore. I mean, what does that do to the Middle East? What events follow from that? How much is that going to continue to plague the final years of Donald Trump's presidency? I said, I don't know that it's going to happen that way, but this is really bad for Netanyahu. For the Israeli public, you know, they don't want to compromise with Hamas. They see what happens. They see compromise with terrorist groups, you get October 7th. So this Hamas deal is wildly unpopular with the Israeli public. So, but then Benjamin Netanyahu, this was one of his strong points, was that he had a good relationship with Donald Trump, that he had a relationship going back to the first term. And there was a lot of good things that followed from that relationship that the Israelis loved. So, you know, whatever he does, it's in a bad position. I think if he were to try to stand by this deal and maintain a good relationship with Donald Trump and go along with this deal for that sake, he'd be punished in the ballot box. But even standing up to the deal, I mean, this is one of his strong points, was that he had a good relationship with Donald Trump. If you don't have that anymore, if he's not the Trump whisperer anymore, if Donald Trump has turned against Israel or is pursuing policies that are bad for Israel, that hurts Benjamin Netanyahu a lot. Could it lose him the election? And well, I was in Israel just a few weeks ago, and it was really interesting just to see, if you go back before those October 7th attacks, before that Hamas attack a few years ago, there was a lot of division within Israel. And you had serving reservists, members of the military, saying, well, we're not going to follow orders because we disagree with Netanyahu, because we don't like him, because we think he's setting himself up as a dictator. You had massive protests going on. I mean, you had people talking about, are we heading to a civil war within Israel? Not a Israel versus Muslims or Jews versus Muslims, but a Israeli on Israeli type of civil war. The division is getting that bad. where is this going to end? You know, people asking those kind of questions. And then you had October 7th. And again, how much did that division pave the way for October 7th? Because people were taking their eye off the ball. They considered Benjamin Netanyahu and his supporters a greater threat than they did Hamas. And then you have this attack. And then people did rally together. And you did have a unity government. And you did have politicians saying, well, we'll put aside our differences and we'll serve under Benjamin Netanyahu. Because we do need to rally together to defeat this threat. And now, well, now the division is back. And you have these signs, you know, say no to Mafia Don, talking about Benjamin Netanyahu. Lots of people hate him. Lots of accusations of corruption. Division between secular Jews and religious Jews. Big protests because ultra-Orthodox Jews, you know, they don't want to serve in the military. And they're getting lots of handouts from the government. And even the religious Jews are fed up with this. They serve in the military and they pay their taxes, and all of this subsidizes these ultra-Orthodox that don't serve. And then the ultra-Orthodox, well, they say it's against our religion to serve in the military. And you know, that's causing a lot of division. And this division is a curse. And it's not to say, okay, we just need to tolerate each other and come together. We heard a message at the weekend from Mr. Gerald Flurry. He talked about the need to rally around God. That's where you get true unity. Get to God and his standard, his law, his government. But Satan is really weakening all of these nations with widespread disunity. And I'm rapidly running out. I thought this would be half a segment and I would give you a second segment. And I have more notes on what is prophesied in the Bible on this. But I think I'll have to wrap up here. But there's prophecies in Hosea 5. There's prophecies in Isaiah chapter 10 that talk about this coming division. But Isaiah 11 and verse 13 says that ultimately the envy also of Ephraim shall depart, and the adversaries of Judah shall be cut off. Ephraim shall not envy Judah, and Judah shall not vex Ephraim. We're going to see worsening division between Britain, Ephraim, Manasseh, America, Judah, the Jews in the Middle East. We're going to see that in the short term, and it's going to really curse and damage these nations. But Then Jesus Christ is going to return, and then we're going to see wonderful unity break out between these nations. And all three of these nations will work together in a fantastic way that is going to serve the whole world and be of massive benefit for the entire planet. And that's the wonderful ending of the division that we see. Well, it's been a pleasure to be with you for this time here on Monday. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have any questions, any comments, you can get in touch. TD@thetrumpet.com. I believe Mr. Flurry, or maybe Mr. Livingston, will be back with you tomorrow. So again, thank you very much for joining us. Until then, keep watching your world.